As I said to you all earlier on, we are discussing here this morning the issue of this online purchase tax that was implemented some time ago. It's been causing some problems. We're being told that, well, online purchases is something we need to take a look at. Republic Bank recently reducing the amount of money people can spend within a specific time frame. Let's place the discussion right back on the front burner. Let's welcome back to our program a gentleman who's been with us before, is coordinator of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers. That's Jayshimalila Darsing. Good morning to you. Welcome back to our show.
Pleasant morning, Satish. A pleasant morning to Trinidad and Tobago. I hope everyone had a happy Republic Day. Thank you.
Nice to have you with us here this morning. It's the first of a series of discussions that we're going to have leading up to the budget presentation. And this one deals with the issue of foreign exchange, which has been a controversial issue in this country for quite some time. This didn't pop up overnight. And the conversations on foreign exchange took a turn, a very public turn, when former Central Bank Governor Jawala Rambaran highlighted to us in no uncertain terms where the bulk of the foreign exchange was going. And he was really put the information in the public domain. And Finance Minister Colin Mamet and others weren't really too pleased about that. Fast forward, 7 years, going on 8 years later, we have a foreign exchange problem that is worse than when this administration took office in 2015. Now we're being told about online purchase tax and whether or not it should or should not be removed. Let's begin, rather than focusing on the purchase tax, let's focus on the availability of foreign exchange. As coordinator of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, you'll have the opportunity to speak to a wide cross-section of business people. What have they been saying about foreign exchange?
Well, let me begin. Good morning. Excuse again. Please, one moment. Right. Satish, well, let me go back to the beginning, but let me start at one point in the end, and then I'll go back to the beginning. So here you have former NGC chairman, former Minister of Energy and Minister in the Ministry of Finance, and now he sits as the ambassador, our High Commissioner to Guyana, Conrad Enthill, stated that Trinidad and Tobago does not have a U.S. foreign exchange availability problem at all. We have no problems of accessing U.S. dollars. And first in the business community, well, we looked in astonishment and bewilderment if this gentleman understands the realities of what has to be done. So we go back to the beginning, and you mentioned Jawala Rambaran. And in the People's Partnership Administration, this is where the problems were exacerbated, is that the way the Trinidad and Tobago economy has been evolved into, and I want to use the word evolve into, we became a country that runs on foreign exchange. And while we have a lot of small and medium enterprises littered throughout our national landscape, a lot of family-owned businesses, and they contribute to the economy, they contribute to employment, they pay taxes, and other statutory payments that are required, at least most of them. The issue has come to today in that, and again, I want to go back to the word evolved, because the word evolved and the word planned are two different things, is that the SMEs now have to find a way to change their business model and to find a way how you can earn your own foreign exchange. I believe the time has come where the foreign exchange crunch actually is a reality that is hitting us very hard, and that the country has reached a point of inflection where decisions have to be made. How do we change our operations because the external environment is changing? Now, when we were having our discussions about the decisions taken by Republic Bank, cutting the limit from 10,000 to 5,000, we will go back further to remember when that limit was $25,000, and it gradually started to cut back and cut back and cut back. And I want to say, Satish, and to your audience, that when this cutting back was taking place, there was no level of strategy that was being developed in consultation with other groups who will be affected by it in order to stabilize the foreign exchange situation. What is happening in this country, why we have reached this stage, is the silo thinking that exists with government, central bank, the business sector, and other sectors, the energy sector in particular, on how we could have reversed this stem regarding the unavailability or the scarcity of foreign exchange. Now, Satish, you mentioned former Central Bank Governor Jawaharlal Rambaran. He went into a Chamber of Commerce forum, and he did mention the names of companies that use a lot of the foreign exchange and a lot of the importing. He mentioned car companies, and he also mentioned companies like PriceSmart and so forth. I remember seeing that on television. Now, I am not here to get into the demerits or merits of what he said, but what is being said to this morning is that these operations cannot continue to the scale that it has before. Because if it continues, we are going to find ourselves in a situation where the foreign exchange is going to be dried up, because the consistent use and scarce availability will lead to that eventual outcome. So we are at a point where we have to have collective discussions, collective strategic ideals and actions on how to build back up our foreign exchange reserve, given the fact that we have declining oil revenue, we have reserves that eventually will be exhausted within the next 10 years, at the rate of how the world is going and the millennial development goals and the climate changes are taking place, oil will end up being a sunset product of the world, where the advent of electric cars is going to be a reality. But a saving grace for Trinidad is the natural gas, which is a much more cleaner fossil fuel. And that is something that could go a long way, not just in terms of our industry, but also in terms of use of CNG in motor vehicles as well. Now, let me touch a point here regarding Loran Manatee and the Dragon Field gas in terms of what it means for Trinidad and Tobago. Now, Loran, I want to make it clear. I want to manage everyone's expectations, Satish. The Loran Manatee field will not come online till 2028. I think we are in 2023. No, I think I know. Heading into the last quarter, was October. It's just a stone's throw away. So it's going to be some hard years for gas between 2024 and 2026. The saving grace for Trinidad and Tobago is if the Dragon Field gas comes online. And again, the infrastructure wouldn't be too problematic, because you just have to build a pipeline from Dragon Field to one of our existing gas fields in the North Coast, and then that could be pumped into Point 14 in Trinidad and Tobago. The gas, again, is distributed into two players, the liquefied natural gas plant in the form of Atlantic LNG in Point 14, and then sent via pipeline to the actors and players in the Point Lisas industrial estate, who contribute significantly to the foreign exchange as well as Atlantic LNG. One of the, in my opinion, although the Petrotrin, well, we can argue that there were some management issues that let the company into this big, large debt and all the bonds that it took out and other debts it took out to continue operating. And then there was issues related to the union, and there was issues related to lack of productivity and worker attitudes and so forth. But if Petrotrin continued as a going concern with an intent to sell, we would have also been able to realize foreign exchange, because that is how the country operated since the days of Texaco till under the Prime Minister George Chambers administration was able to buy out Texaco, and it was called Trintoc, and then eventually under restructuring program by the IDB, Herbert Atwell of the NAR government was the Minister of Energy at the time, converted, restructured Petrotrin. And I could remember, these are things that we know, that when Petrofin was earning its foreign exchange, particularly its US dollars, I remember conversations taking place with the Ministry of Finance and Central Bank to Petrofin head of finance to send some US their way, and they would send the TT dollars back Petrofin's way, where Petrofin was able to use that money for their operations, paying off their suppliers, service providers, and other contractors. So we had a circular economy going there in southern Trinidad, and a lot of prosperity was taking place. The central bank had their allocations to give banks their foreign exchange, a system devised by Wendell Motley and had the stamp of approval of former Prime Minister Patrick Manning, and things were going quite well. So in Trinidad and Tobago, it is the progression of the gas economy that will enable us to receive a certain level of buoyancy and availability of foreign exchange. What is happening right now is that we are going through the very much declining revenues and declining earnings in the oil and gas sector, and that is stifling our foreign exchange earnings. But let us look at the other side of the coin, Satish. Let us look at the other side of the coin is, why was there not a deliberate strategy and a deliberate action plan to develop and enhance the other productive sectors of the economy? And let me get into at least four of them. I'll get into five. One, agriculture, very much high potential. Okay, that we need to enhance our food security, and we can export food. The things that are grown here, there is a market out there, particularly peppers. Two, high-tech manufacturing. Now, I want to say something. We have a very good manufacturing sector, and the TTMA is doing a lot of wonderful work, taking their members to missions to find markets and work with them. And the CEO of the TTMA, Dr. Ramesh Ramdi, must be complimented for these efforts. But there are other things we can make that are very much high-tech. Yes, we may have to import the technology. We may have to put things together. But there is a book written by, it's called Startup Nation, written by Saul Singer and Dan Senior. It is how Israel converted their economy, and although they have a strong agriculture base, into technology that is bought by countries all around the world. And yes, while Israel focuses on security for obvious reasons and the geopolitics that goes around it, why can't we focus on technology for industry, technology for medical uses, and technology for a whole range of other type of uses that can be applied to open up new sectors? And that is the other level that our manufacturers and our venture capitalists need to finance these things. And this is where government has to create an enabling environment. If you ask me if government has done enough to create an environment, I will say, Satish, no, that is not being done. And if you ask me if enough proper planning is being done, I would say no, because the stakeholders are not being drawn into the planning process. And once stakeholders are not being drawn in, particularly business, we don't feel that sense of ownership. We are being feel you are told what to do, rather than we share a conversation on what has to be done. This is the 21st century. Governance takes a different turn, and Trinidad and Tobago society and global society is changing. Then there is, of course, the services sector. And a lot of potential and GDP can be derived from the services sector. And a subset of that are the creative sectors, arts and entertainment, film industry, and other types of entertainment industries that can derive a lot of benefit for the country. Bollywood alone contributes to 30% of the Indian economy. Bollywood, you can imagine what Hollywood has done, okay? And then finally, and I say this with a certain degree of caution and explain why, is tourism. There's a lot of potential for tourism. This is what Costa Rica, tourism, and they have done a lot to enhance their tourism industry and to attract the tourists that they want, especially when it comes to ecotourism. They have cable cars in their forest where people can actually drive through a tropical forest. Now, we may look at the northern range and take what we see on those trees on the hills for granted. But other people around the world, being in a tropical forest is a big deal. I'll give you another example of tourism. In Mount St. Benedict, there is a small hotel, very small, called Pax Guest House. At max, they might be able to hold about 15 to 20 people. But are you aware that people come to Pax Guest House from all over the world to look at birds in our northern range? Birds? That is truly amazing. So while it is that we have a foreign exchange crunch owing to the declining revenues of the energy sector, and I don't see that being alleviated, maybe until 2025, 2026 should, and I say this contingent on the Dragon field coming online, so we have some natural gas available, although we'll have to pay Venezuela for that. Like it or not, that will be a reality. And 2028, when we have Loran Manifi field come online, so we will, and according to the deal that is being made with the Venezuelans, we will have gas for Atlantic LNG and for Point Lisas, and maybe an enhanced Point Lisas industrial estate for the next 80 to 100 years. So while there is potential for prosperity, we are going through a very serious crunch time now, and things need to be done that will alleviate and give some relief to the SMEs. But a conversation, beginning with the Ministry of Trade and then with government, is to work with the private sector to see how they can reimagine, restructure their current business models so that they can be earners of foreign exchange rather than users of foreign exchange. Mm. But if that external environment, if government does not create an enabling environment, that will not take place. I hope I have answered your question.
Yeah, you have, in great detail. We need to take a couple quick messages, but when we get back, we take our discussion back to this online purchase tax and what's going on with it and the allegation that online purchases resulting in the shortage of forex that we're seeing, and a couple of other things we'll be discussing as we continue our discussion with coordinator of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, that's Jayshimali Ladhar Singh. Stay with us. Welcome back. Continuing our conversation, the coordinator of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, that's Jayshimali Ladhar Singh. We're discussing foreign exchange, and we had a long discussion. You gave us a lot of information about why we are probably in the position that we're in. One of the things that we've been hearing is that people buying things online is one of the major reasons for us having a foreign exchange shortage. What's your take on that?
Satish, I will now be very cautious with my answer. First of all, we live in an open democratic society, which is supposed to be free and respecting people's rights. There's a Bill of Rights that is existing in the Constitution. Now, bear with me, but this is going somewhere. So it is the state cannot tell Satish Mahabir what store to go in to buy a long sleeve shirt, or what store to go, what company to go in to buy a new motor vehicle. Okay? We have choice, we have freedom of choice, and we can purchase where we want to purchase. If persons, again, want to purchase online, you want to go to Amazon or other types of websites to effect a purchase through their credit card, that is their fundamental right. I want to make that absolutely clear, that people are free to purchase from whatever avenue they wish to purchase from. So that point being established. Our local consumers have risen to a very sophisticated level. And that is thanks again to how our economy evolved. I keep using the word evolved. How our society was able to realign and change. So the taste that the Canadians may have or the North Americans may have in many respects are the same that Trinidadians will have. And we have developed at a very rapid pace. Now, the online tax, let me make it clear, was not a bad idea, because government had to find a window to derive revenue because they are aware that these activities take place. I want to say the word, however, in this country, with the exception of maybe the central bank and maybe to some respect the University of the West Indies, depending on what is being researched, not enough data is collected. Even though we have the CSO, I still question their methodologies, because a lot of things don't correct to me, and my members and the activities of the businesses within my members give a different story to what the CSO says. So that's a different discussion, but I want to put that out there. Not enough studies have been done as to determine how much online purchases take place. I see the Minister of Finance put out a figure there for September. But then again, we have problems accepting and believing the government statistics. Again, that is just me speaking on as an individual and as someone who has done market research and other types of research in the past. There are times you question the methodology of how these things work. These results were derived of. But however, let me come back to the online tax to answer your questions directly. There are different models around the world, even in Europe, in the European Union, where online tax exists in some of the territories. And it works in those territories simply because of the volumes of purchases that take place. And those tax are used for different purposes. What we are not told here, even though there's a 7% tax, is maybe the rationale behind such a tax that needs to be explained to the population, and two, where those tax dollars are going. The common man don't have time to go through the draft estimates or review of the economy, and these are documents that is available subsequent to the budget reading. But it needs to be placed somewhere in the budget speech so that people can hear it and explain to. Those who want the job of politicians have to know that they have to speak and they have to explain in a very simplistic way. Now, the whole issue of the online purchase tax, as far as we in the Confederation are concerned, it's not something that we are calling for its removal at all. Not just because certain politicians said we have to agree with them on either side of the fence. It will tend to encourage, we hope, over the long term, more purchases in our local stores that exist within our national territory. And as the coordinator of the Confederation of Chambers, we want to see more local purchases take place within our environment to support the local store owners so they can keep their people employed. They have the ability to restock. They have the ability to make their statutory payments and income taxes and so on, which is revenue.
I hear you when it comes to ensuring that local businesses can survive. I understand the economics of what's going on, but there's a reality that businesses need to confront. In an environment that is as globalized as the one we live in, where you can sit in the comfort of your home on your couch and you can shop in a store in any part of the world.
Yes.
It affords the consumer a level of choice that they never had before. And when the online tax was introduced, it was seen as protectionism, for want of a different word, or make up a word that's not a word. Because what you had, and I'll give you a personal experience, there was an item that I wanted to purchase, and I went to a store in Trincity Mall that had the item. And I'm going to quote the exact prices, because this is not second or third, and this is first, and this is what I experienced. The item was being sold for $3,600 in a store in Trincity Mall. And I went online. I bought the item and had it shipped to Trinidad, and the overall bill was $700. Now, don't get me wrong, I understand that businesses need to survive, need to protect local businesses and the economy and workers and all that kind of thing. But when you have businesses that, and I'll use this term guardedly, digging out people's eye, people today can tell what a business is making on an item. And they can judge for themselves whether it's fair or not, because now purchasing online has become a little more cumbersome. Still cheaper in some instances. Actually, there are some instances now that because of the online tax and because of the weight and this and that and the next and all kind of thing, purchasing online has become difficult to the point where sometimes it's more expensive than buying locally. Why should any consumer support a government that does something like that?
Okay, let's go back to the example. So the item costs 3,000, but when you purchase the same item online and taking everything into consideration, packaging everything was $700 thereabouts.
Mm-hmm.
Now those are real cases, Satish. Let me begin by stating that, and I stated at the beginning of my narrative that nobody could tell you what store to go in and buy a shirt or what business place to go to buy a car. There is freedom. And you are absolutely correct. So consumers in Trinidad and Tobago, and they are very intelligent and they are very smart and savvy, they will know, just like what you did, to buy items similar that what is taking place in a store, what is available in a store, to what is available online, and they make a choice. And I'm saying we have the power of choice. What I will add on is that some of these local stores, and they need to, this is something they need to look at, and this is a reality that will hit them hard in their faces, is that they have to revise again their business models and their pricing strategies, because their markups and their margins are just way too high in many cases. And what is also affecting these individuals, these stores, is that when there is a cost that is added on by the state, excuse me, Satish, it's passed on to the consumer, whose incomes are not rising since post-pandemic. So what is the consumer supposed to do, like you? You will try to find the same item at the best bargain possible without compromising on the quality. And that is consumer behavior. And your case is not unique. So while the Confederation would like to see more local purchases being effected and more local stores and local businesses being supported, and I think consumers want to support their local businesses, they are also have to seek their personal interest and acquire items at the most effective cost. Your stories are real stories, Satish.
In order for businesses to survive, they need to navigate these challenges, because the consumer is not illiterate anymore. The consumer is not without choice, and people find those things because they look for it. But on the flip side of that, when you have a bank limiting how much foreign exchange people can use in any given month, businesses are going to suffer as a result of that. I don't necessarily buy into the premise that it's online shopping that's causing this thing, because I think, and I'm subject to correction, that the central bank releases the same amount of foreign exchange in the tranches that it does, whether it's twice a year or however they do. That's my information, that central bank has not reduced. And as I said, I'm subject to correction. I don't think they have reduced the amount of foreign exchange that they issue at any given point in time. If they have, well, I think central bank governor Helene needs to come out and tell us, what is the reduction? But we still don't know where the foreign exchange go in. And they're throwing up things in the air to blame everybody else when we may not necessarily be getting the real story. Who is monitoring these licensed dealers to make sure that they are not hoarding the foreign exchange or using it for their own business to the detriment of everybody else? And aside and apart from that kind of monitoring from central bank, which we don't hear from, there is a thriving black market in this country for foreign exchange. You could get any amount of foreign exchange you want to buy. You pay $8 for it. And just walking any Chinese restaurant, to people know where to go. Down in South Trinidad, in Cedras or Icacos or somewhere there are people who trade in foreign exchange on the beach in a little hut. And everybody knows about this. You could go down there and buy any amount of US you want. They have one of the biggest trades in US dollars in Cedras, and everybody know what I'm saying is true. So do we really have this shortage of foreign exchange, or is it that the distribution of foreign exchange is where the real problem is, as Joala Rambaran told us 7 years ago?
The distribution is a problem. We and you are correct in another level, Satish, is that we don't have the real story. What I can tell you is that the Confederation is planning to approach the central bank for a meeting. We have asked them for several times to meet, and they, in fairness to the central bank, and I commend them for that, they have met with us. We have asked very pointed questions to the governor, and in all fairness to him, he has addressed it to us. Address our questions. So we want to get that story as well, in order to disseminate information down to our members. But certainly what you mentioned about the parallel economy, or I would call the informal economy, regarding the trade in foreign exchange on the beaches and the huts, I've gotten similar information from our network in Point 14 Chamber as well. I'm not saying that they do that type of business, but they are aware of it, just as how you got that information. And there are other dealers too that, if you know who to go to and who to talk to, you will be able to access the US dollars, but you have to pay a higher exchange rate. That's just the way it is. We have always had a informal economy. There's a formal sector and an informal sector. We have always had an informal sector, especially the days when you had exchange controls. So you have a certain allowance where you are allowed to take out X amount of US once a year, Satish, may I say, for vacation. But yet, if you have the right connections, you will know who to go to get the other US dollars in cash. And that will continue to thrive. And there is nothing anyone could do to stop it. But let's come back to the online purchases. I come back to this, to the fact that your story is a real story, and there are many other stories similar to yours. So the thing about it is this. Again, we come back to there needs to have a serious conversation with the business sector regarding how business is practiced and what needs to be done through moral suasion, of course. But secondly, and more importantly, is that you cannot put your finger and blame people on online purchases for the depletion of foreign exchange, because they are not the biggest users of foreign exchange. The biggest users of foreign exchange are the ones that was highlighted by former Central Bank Governor Jawaharlal Rambaran, and they are in the hundreds of millions of dollars in foreign exchange. Not the people like you who will access Amazon or other websites to purchase an item that they need. Consumers have limited purchasing power, not corporations. And I want to make that very clear, Satish. Even when that was mentioned by Minister of Finance, a gentleman by the name of Lincoln Marat, CEO of WebSource, disputed that. And they do a lot of the online trading facilitations and courier services. So he and all, through CNC3, your sister TV station, mentioned that as well. So what is the true story?
Well, you
I
see,
throw that back out.
one of the problems you have in this country is accountability.
Yes.
We have issued, and I say this without fear of contradiction, invitations to the Minister of Finance, to the Central Bank Governor, and to others to come and sit with us. Because you can't just throw a statement like that out into the public domain and not justify it. And I think one of the
Correct.
First questions the Minister of Finance needs to answer is, well, if you're saying online purchases eating up the foreign exchange, what is the value of the online purchases for a year, or for 6 months, or for 1 month? So that we can, well, here now, you know, the finance minister are really talking the truth. But they don't avail
Yes.
themselves to those questions. And
No, they don't.
this government has a track record of blaming everybody else for what's going on. And who really is the victim? The victim is the consumer. Because the consumer has no way whatsoever to challenge what the government intends to do. So the finance minister is probably setting the stage, because that's what they do. They throw a matter out into the public domain to solicit public support. So he already done start to say, see them people who purchasing online, them licking up the foreign exchange, that's why you can't get 200 US when you want to go away. Don't be surprised if in this financial package that's to come here, he increased the property, the tax on online purchases, you know, because he has already set the stage to do so. And that is going to be to the detriment of a lot of businesses, because you have some small businesses who have built their business on purchasing online and selling back to people. or acting as a medium in between, those businesses will die.
Yes.
And that's one of the realities that we have to face. Now, the reason why I say there's a lack of accountability, the one other question that the finance minister needs to answer, and I've had Kevin Ramnarayan on the program, he has raised this as well. What are we doing to earn more money? When you're in a situation like this, you could deal with it two ways. Robert T. Kiyosaki, who is one of the most sought-after financial advisors in the world, said when you're faced with financial problems, there are two ways to approach it. Either you cut your expenses and you spend less, or you earn more money so you could pay for the expenses that have increased. And we do not see the second one taking place with the administration of the day when it comes to the country's finances. We continue to be told how bad things are. We continue to be told why we don't have money, but we're not being told what we're doing to fix that situation or put us back on a positive note. And as I said, that's where the lack of accountability comes in. Because if you can't sit down and talk to the finance minister, and these post-budget or pre-budget consultations they're going to have, quite frankly, I think, are stage managed. Because you don't really get the kind of information that you want from them. Forgive me for saying that, but that's how I feel about them. The real questions don't get asked, and you definitely don't get the answers. This one, people may think, well, you see that online purchase tax, that's a rich people thing. So that don't impact on me. That's the foolishness that we get when people don't realize that some of the things you're getting to buy on Facebook and social media, where you see people selling things cheap, is because they're buying it online. And they're selling it back as cheap as you could get. And there are so many people who are driving around in their car full of things, dropping off for people because they've started a business online. And I don't know if the finance minister has taken into consideration what that is going to do to the economy. When these people can't shop and can't provide these services to the very same people who say, well, that had no impact on me at all whatsoever. As I'm sure the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers will be monitoring, you would have a lot of these people who would be telling you about the effects that they've already been feeling because of the crunch. And now that Republic Bank and others, I'm sure, are going to trump and follow, so it limit how much they can spend online. What has your membership been saying about that, about businesses surviving and falling by the wayside?
Well, we are very, very, very concerned about what would be the outcome of it. Now, I'll come into your question, but I just want to backtrack one thing I said, and I'm coming to the question. I said society and the business community, everything was allowed to evolve. I did not say it was planned in a particular way. Successful countries, and I'll give one small example of Singapore, even Japan, even countries like Vietnam and India, they have planned how their business sector would look like in consultation with different business leaders. And there is a consistent dialogue between government and business on what type of industries we would focus on, what type of businesses we would focus on, and even go so far as to drill down in how you will operate, as in the case of India. The thing about it is that, in particular, with this government, there has been no consultations with businesses, as far as I know. While there may be some conversations with TTMA and maybe perhaps with the Trinidad Chamber of Industry and Commerce, and maybe sidebar conversations with Energy Chamber, there have been no discussions, none. There has been no discussions or proactive approaches by government asking us, how should we plan to deal with the ease of doing business? How should we plan to bring innovation into the market? That doesn't take place at all. Sometimes we have meetings with Kariri. Kariri just tells us this is what is being done, and this is what we think could be done without even a dialogue. It's more monologue than anything else. And that is why when organizations complain and say, where is the private sector? Why it is that you don't take part in our program? The issue is that you cannot have a monologue with the private sector. You have to have you must have a dialogue with a fertility of different ideas that takes place and what could be done. There's a way you manage those conversations. We don't have the skill. We don't have the bureaucrats with that type of skill. We don't have the policy makers, maybe one or two, but in all, the majority, 95%, don't have that ability to of active engagement with other sectors. And that's why I mentioned at the beginning of this interview, there's a lot of silo thinking, Satish, that is taking place that everybody's operating in isolation of, and I will echo what you said, and blaming others for when the country faces challenges and ills. There is no fresh approaches to anything. When you listen to someone who is the Prince Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, Mohammed bin Salman, like him or dislike him, he has the ability to articulate a vision where he wants the Middle East to be the new Europe of the world and what he's going to do about it. Go back historically and listen to people like Lee Kuan Yew when he inspires people that what Singapore will turn into, and he shares his vision. That is not articulated here. We have a Vision 2030, but who was included in doing this Vision 2030? It's a document that sits there, but if you choose to read it, you read it. That's not the way to communicate a vision. And then the whole issue about the price of oil and the price of gas. How long are we going to rely on other parts of the world going to war so that we will have a high oil prices? We go back to 1973, the beginning of the first oil boom, where there was a Middle East war with Israel, Egypt, and Syria. Now we are looking at the Russian invasion of Ukraine and the whole issue of energy prices and other commodity prices, for example, wheat. I mean, what strategy is the Minister of Finance and by extension the government putting in place to enhance our economy? And what people do not understand, Satish, and I mean, I want to say it again, a country's development is tied to its human capital and human resources, which goes back to its education system. If these are going to be the industries of the future, what are the trained workforce skills that we need to put in place so that we have the capabilities in place to thrust those industries into reality? None of these discussions are taking place at all. Or if it is taking place, not in consultation with the private sector.
Well,
so there is too much silo thinking in this country, Satish.
This may sound unfortunate, but you know, there are people who really benefited from Russia invading Ukraine. We are definitely one of those. Had it not been for that invasion, only God knows where our economy might have been. But when you listen to the finance minister speak, you don't get that impression from him at all. The finance minister is honestly of the opinion that he has done a fantastic job with this country's economy in the past 7 years. And he continues to pat himself on the back. He continues to vilify anyone who questions where the economy is or what is being done when it comes to our economy, and he brands everybody who has a dissenting voice as opposition. We spoke on this program to Kevin Ramnarayan a number of times, and Kevin Ramnarayan spoke to us about one of the main drivers of our economy still, and that's gas production. And he said that our levels of gas production are so low, and that unless we find or we put things in place immediately, we're going to have some real problems that we'll have to navigate from 2025 moving forward. But when you speak to the finance minister, or rather, not when you speak to him, because you can't talk to him. As I said, we've invited him to come on the show. He doesn't want to come. And the central bank governor is the same thing. I don't know when, if ever, we'll get them to come on the show and explain some of these things to the nation. But really, if we were to ask Colin Member, what has been done to make us more money? Or to get us out of the position that we're in, what is the answer you're going to get? And you know, the average citizen doesn't understand these discussions. What we have been doing as a nation since, I think it's 2009 or 2008, whichever budget was the first one that Patrick Manning did a deficit budget. Since then, this country has been spending more money than it has been earning.
Yes. That is true.
And we continue to feel that everything is okay. Let me put it to people, and let me break it down to the home. It comes like your salary is $10,000 a month, but for the past 14 or 15 years, you're spending $15,000 a month. And going up, $15,000, $16,000, $17,000, $18,000 a month, you spending when you're only making $10,000.
Thank you for saying that. Sorry to interrupt. I apologize for interrupting. Thank you for saying that. Because you raise the issue of our foreign debt that we are borrowing both internally and externally to finance our country's needs. And I want to make your audience aware, our debt is paid in US dollars. And that's another activity that's eaten up the foreign exchange, not the online purchases. And I want to make that clear to you, Satish.
As I said, you know, I say this often, our population does not understand a lot of these issues. When we hear our leaders on all sides make comments, we run with it. Because we are a population, many of us can't think for ourselves. We can't analyze some of these things. We don't understand them to the point where we could say, well, you're talking stupidness. I don't agree with what you're saying. Tell me the truth. And that is why the finance minister could come out and say, in no uncertain terms, and not be challenged, that people who purchase in online spend in all the U.S. without telling us, without giving us the information, well, all right, if you're saying people who purchase in online spend in the U.S., how much did they spend last month?
Exactly.
How much they spend the month before that? Or better yet, tell me how much they spend for these for 6 months of the year to justify your statement that people who purchase in online spend in the U.S. Nonsense. But then again, as I say, you can't challenge them because they don't allow you to question them. Coming close to the end of our interview here this morning, and when it comes to the budget, there's going to be a lot of focus on our deficit. Because initially, well, not initially, during the last year, we were told that we eat away the deficit and we actually make $1 billion in profit for the financial year. So we were just looking real good and all that kind of thing, mostly because of Ukraine and what transpired there. Since then, a lot has happened. And people are asking the question, well, okay, where are we going to be at the end of this financial year, moving into the next one? What are some of the things that the regional business chambers are looking for in this fiscal package to be presented?
Well, one of the first things we are looking for is a comprehensive statement of government and private sector collaborating actively regarding the ease of doing business, because it is very, very difficult to do business in Trinidad and Tobago. Even registering a company, it's a very long, drawn, tedious process. Even though your things are being put online, it is even more difficult. And there has to be a re-engineering of the process for the ease of doing business. Not just registering a business, it is registering property, obtaining construction permits vis-a-vis town and country planning approvals.
To interrupt on that point you raised in there.
Please, go
you
ahead.
You see this thing about online and doing business in this country? That's like pulling teeth, you know. Because there are some government agencies where you cannot give them your documents over the counter anymore. They ain't taking it. They tell immediately you have to go to the government portal and you have to submit your documents online. I've been trying to submit documents for a month. A state agency, and every time you try, it's because they're buffering. Any time of the day or night you going on that, they just can't get it done. And that shows how backward this country is, because we're pushing everybody online. Every government service, even if it's social service now, you have to apply. You have to go online, and it is so difficult to get anything done. But you don't have a choice, and you don't have an alternative. And when it comes to this thing about registering businesses, I had to go through that process as well. And I'll tell you something, it ain't easy. The kind of thing they're asking you for now, under the guise of anti-money laundering and all of these kinds of things now that they're putting in place, they're making it real cumbersome. Very, very difficult. Actually, they make...
difficult.
Yeah,
yes.
It is.
And you know what is happening? I don't know if this is deliberate. Again, I'm speculating. If government has made these things more difficult because they don't want new entrants to come into the market, but to keep the established businesses there. And that is a worrisome development, because you're supposed to facilitate new entrants, new businesses into your environment. And that type of practice is deeply reprehensible. So, and you know, the thing is, there is no taking on of the customer's complaint. You just explain certain things happening to you directly. No one listens. And that is the frustrating part about this, about living here. Your voice is just a cry in the wilderness. But coming back to the budget, we want to talk about the ease of doing business. We also want to look at the whole issue of crime and security. Now, there is a need And I'm giving you one aspect, Satish. There is a need for more joint patrols throughout the entire country because the entire country has become a hotspot. The army will either have to be expanded or redeployed in what they do to focus on public security. So you want to see joint patrols in Arima, San Fernando, Separia, Chatham, St. James, what have you. We need those joint patrols. The manpower has to be there. And the cameras that are on the highways, are on the streets, must be reactivated. Government will have to use all that money. There can be other arrangements. You could go to other countries where they can help you do that to enable your internal security. There's assistance available where that could be accessed. Not only that too, but our intelligence system, we do have a SSA, Security Surveillance Agency. Again, that needs to be expanded. And I don't know what activities they do, nor am I asking, but our arm have to be there to look at the criminal element and the gang element and disseminate that information to law enforcement to take decisions and to take action. The police service have to have the will to act. And the thing about it too is that they also must have support services for the police. And let me explain, Satish. I really want to be balanced in what I am saying. And I mean, if you are free to contradict. But look at that issue the other day with that policewoman and her boyfriend. And he's also a policeman. And they had the relationship had ended and she called him over to talk to him about it. But she had planned to shoot him anyway. And then she turned the gun on herself. Now, that hit me very hard. I don't like to see these murder suicides. It has me, these things have me depressed for years. But I'm focusing on the police service. And when this lady applied for leave to travel abroad, so that she could deal with her depression, it was denied. Those people who denied her the leave are the ones supposed to take responsibility for that murder-suicide. I make no bones about that. And if she had applied for leave and she couldn't get the leave, there must be some window of opportunity that she could speak directly to the commissioner to explain the situation. I think the commissioner, being a married woman, would understand, at least. So I'm saying there must be not only psychological, but they need to have people who mentor the police. And these people could come from outside the service. They need to have people to do coaching, leadership coaching in the police service. They need, the police service need to revamp and re-engineer their systems in order to make it more responsive to what is going on. The crime situation in the external environment is changing rapidly and growing. And the police service continues to operate as a 20th century organization. And that is my issue, Satish. So that needs to take place. And let's go back again. There needs to have a comprehensive program for public sector reform in this country. So you just gave a wonderful example that their agencies and their ministries not accepting your documents over the counter. And you have to do it online. So what are we doing with this big bloated public service? We have too much people there. That public service needs to cut in order to cut our domestic expenditure. Because if for every dollar earned, 60 to 70 cents goes into wages and salaries. That needs to cut. Give people other avenues and some help to go into other alternative forms of employment and trim those ministries, but make it efficient, make it more service-oriented, and make it more responsive to the needs of the public. And to have leaders in those ministries to meet the metrics that have been set out by government in order to make these ministries continuously relevant. So those are the three things: the ease of doing business, crime and security, and public sector reform. Basically, that's where I'm going with this, Satish.
Yeah. Well, we've only just begun our discussions an entire week, and I'm sure that leading up to the presentation and post, we'll have some more discussions because the chambers, the regional confederation, would have some opinion on what we hear in this fiscal package to come. So I'm sure that we'll be speaking to you again in the not too distant
future. Thank you. And we'll have many opinions, and certainly some of my presidents would love to dialogue with you, mm-hmm, to let you know what's happening in their neck of the woods, San Fernando, Faisabad, Gasparillo. There's a lot of things happening, Satish, and they want to find an avenue to discuss with you what's really taking place.
Well,
Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure as always having you on the program. Thank you once again for being here with us this morning.
All right, Satish, and enjoy your holiday today. And again, a good day to Trinidad and Tobago.
And that's how we drop our curtains on this interview here, ladies and gentlemen. And that, of course, our special guest, coordinator of the Confederation of Regional Business Chambers, Jayashimalila Darsing. Let's take a couple of messages. We're supposed to have another interview starting in about 10 minutes' time. Talking about trauma. And how do you deal with that? We've been seeing some instances, some occurrences on the national landscape that leave much to be desired. That and so much more. Stay with us.